find me a classier person than this next guest. An Emmy Award-winning broadcaster, a play-by-play announcer for CBS Sports, Turner Sports, Westwood One Radio Sports. He has served as the Brooklyn Nets play-by-play announcer since 1995. No one better. He is one and one, one of one. Ian Eagle is my guest. Ian, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate this. Thank you so much for making time. How are you, my dude?
Hey, what's up, Romy? Good to talk to you, bud.
It is so good to have you, Ian. Appreciate it so much. Let me jump right into it because I don't want to waste any of your time. But starting with the Final Four, nobody anywhere could have predicted or expected this particular Final Four, Ian. How unusual yet awesome is this group of four to you?
It's definitely funky. It's definitely different. I dig it. I like stories that come out of left field. I like the fact that there's new names, there's new participants. Since seeding began in 1979, it's the first Final Four without a top three seed. Was UConn underseeded? Yeah, they were, but they were a four seed. Miami, a five seed. San Diego State, a five seed. FAU, a nine seed. You could have polled people filling out brackets before this tournament began and asked them, what does FAU stand for? And I think maybe 20% would have said Florida Atlantic University. So to me, it's got a little bit of everything. You've got the history with UConn, and then you have three programs that are trying to make their own version of history in Houston this weekend.
All right. So in your opinion, is it a one-off? Is it an anomaly? Is it an aberration? Are we going to see a return of the Blue Bloods to the biggest stage going forward? Or given the changing landscape of college sports, could this in fact be the new normal?
Yeah, I don't think it's a one-off. I know in the past we've had great stories. George Mason going to the Final Four, VCU going to the Final Four, Loyola Chicago, Final Four. And each time that's happened, we've said after the fact, oh, yeah, this is going to become more of the natural, usual form of college basketball. And it didn't really happen. A year ago, who was in the Final Four? Duke, North Carolina, Villanova, Kansas, the eventual champion. I think now with the transfer portal, with NIL, with the level of play now being pretty close across the board, Jim, you know this. You've been following college hoops for so long. If you used to go with the eye test of, all right, look at this team, look at that team. Okay, I could tell you which team's the blue blood, which team is trying to just piece together a competitive group. That's just not the case anymore. If you didn't know FAU and Kansas State, if you knew nothing about those two teams, showed up at Madison Square Garden and just asked somebody arbitrarily, okay, who's who? I don't know if they would have been able to tell you. FAU looks like they belong. They've got the look of a team that belongs in Houston in the Final Four. I think things have changed. They've changed dramatically, and I don't think we're going back. I think this is the way things are going to be.
Ian Eagle is joining us. You know, I hear exactly what you're saying, so maybe this question doesn't make as much sense, but I was going to ask you, speaking of the Blue Bloods, you ask me, UConn, given their history, I can make an argument that they're every bit the Blue Blood that Duke, yep, Carolina, Kansas, and UCLA are, but they're never characterized as such. They're never included in that group, seemingly. Why do you think that is?
Well, it's recent history. I think back to the second tournament that I did. It was 1999 for CBS. I was in Sacramento, and who was there? UConn. That was their first run to a national championship. Jim Calhoun was a fast-talking New Englander. I was basically understanding every four words that he was saying in our coaching sit-down with him prior to the game. I was just trying to follow along. He was speeding along with all the information on his team, and I'm trying to jot down stuff, and I realized, you know, this guy had a serious command of his team, how to build a winner, and then that was it. From that point on, you recognized that UConn had figured out the secret sauce. They win it with Kevin Ollie, then there's a dip, and now Dan Hurley has been exactly what they needed, someone to build the program. And I think give a lot of credit to him for recognizing that he had to make some changes in how he handled things, his bedside manner, how he dealt with officials. It doesn't mean he's not intense. He still is. He brings all the passion. But I think he picks and chooses his spots, and I think his team has fed off of that. Yes, UConn belongs in that conversation. Then look at their group. They check every box. They have the dominant big man. in Sunogo. They have the NBA guard in Jordan Hawkins. It's going to play at the next level. They have the all-everything performer in Andre Jackson Jr. They've got young blood in Caravan and Klingon. They're really stacked. To me, they're the best team in the Final Four, and if you're asking me, I would tell you it would be a surprise at this stage if they don't win the whole thing.
I'm not going to argue that. Ian Eagle is joining us, except to say that there are no absolutes in this tournament, but you're right. Going into the final weekend, they look like a cut above. You know, Ian, when you talk about what it was like back in 1999 when you were in Sacramento and you saw UConn, Jim Nance's amazing tenure as the lead voice of the NCAA tournament is going to end Monday night with his 32nd consecutive national championship broadcast, and you will succeed him at the Final Four next year in Glendale. Listen, I'm not just saying this, I mean this. I know that you prepare for every assignment, regardless of what it is or where it is, as if it is the Final Four. That's part of what makes you, you. That said, what does this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity represent to you as you look ahead to it?
It means a lot, obviously. And, Romy, I have to say now that I've just flashed back in my own brain, 98, 99, 2000, I'm going through my Rolodex, mental Rolodex. UConn was in Denver that year. My first year was Sacramento, and it was Arizona, it was Maryland, it was Illinois State, it was Tennessee, it was Nicholls State, it was Utah State. The next year was UConn, 1999, so that's where I got my first taste of Jim Calhoun and the Huskies. As far as me, look, ultimately, not much is going to change in how I approach it. Of course, it's going to be this extra weekend, and it's going to be three more games, and they just happen to be the three biggest games of the season for college basketball. But in how I approach the job, the energy level, the information, the connectivity with analysts and the sideline reporter, Bill Raftery, Grant Hill, Tracy Wolfson, the production team, all of that is going to be very seamless. And ultimately, it's about the game. If the game is great, I promise you the coverage will go parallel with it. And if the game isn't, then I've got to up the entertainment factor as opposed to the information factor. And I have a good sense of that. I've done so many of these games now through the years. Obviously, 25-plus NCAA tournaments. So this event is something that's really close to my heart. And the fact that Jim Nance has done it at such a high level for so long just means he set the bar so high. So I recognize the assignment, and I absolutely do not take it lightly.
Extremely well said, and I know that for a fact. Ian Eagle joining us. Listen, before you go, as the TV voice of the Nets, you've seen a solid year from Brooklyn. I want to ask you about them. I want to ask you, Ian, specifically about Ben Simmons. He's now been shut down for the rest of the season due to a lingering back injury. What do you think his overall basketball future looks like now?
I don't know. I don't know if he knows. I think they'll say all the right things. He has new representation. The Nets are going to say all the right things. They look forward to having Ben back in the fold next year at 100% so he can bring all of the different skills that he does to the floor for them, and that's what they visualized when they traded for Ben Simmons and the James Harden deal. But behind the scenes, I don't know. I think it's a lot murkier and mysterious because we just don't know what the motivation level is and if he's now getting used to this. You know, this is not just 1 year for Ben Simmons. This is a lost 2 years. Last season basically didn't happen for him. So when you look back at some of those highlights, Jim, when Ben was dominating, going to the All-Star team and the candidate for Defensive Player of the Year in the NBA, it feels like a long time ago now. And that's what's concerning if you're the Nets. How to prepare for next year and build your team if you don't know what you're going to get from Ben Simmons. I can't get inside his brain. I don't know about his love for the sport and whether or not this is driving him to be great once again. We just don't know. But as far as planning purposes for the Nets, I think they've got to have a plan A, plan B, plan C. And they can't just assume that Ben Simmons is going to be a part of this thing.
All fair. He is an Emmy Award-winning broadcaster, play-by-play announcer for CBS Sports, Turner Sports, Westwood One Radio Sports. And as I mentioned, Brooklyn Nets play-by-play announcer since 1995. Ian Eagle, my guest. Ian, I can't say how much I appreciate that. Thank you so much for the visit. Always great to have you on the show, and I appreciate the friendship, Ian. Thank you very much.
Romy, anytime, bud. Enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you down the road.
You too. Ian Eagle, what a pro. What an absolute pro.